We're going to start at the Mishnah on the bottom of Yud Amud Beis. So the Mishnah tells us, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Bodkin or Yadalid, Uvi Yadalid Shachris, Uvi Shas Habir, Vachachamim Omrim, Lo Badak or Yadalid, Yivdok Bi Yadalid, Lo Badak Bi Yadalid, Yivdok Besoch HaMoed, Lo Badak Besoch HaMoed, Yivdok Liachar HaMoed, Umashem Mishar Yenichenu Betzina, Kedei Shelo Yehit Tzarech Bedika Acharav. So the Mishnah starts out by presenting what appears to be a machlokas. We'll see the Gemara is going to kind of amend and change around what the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda is, but at least for right now, Rabbi Yehuda seems to be assuming that a person is required to do bedikas chametz at three separate times. They need to do bedika on the night of the 14th, when we know that that's when we usually do bedikas chametz. They have to then do it again the morning of the 14th, and then again at the last moment before they must get rid of their chametz. That's what Rabbi Yehuda seems to be saying. Again, we'll see in the Gemara that that's not exactly what he holds, but whereas the Chachamim say that no, the Chachamim say that basically the optimal time to do bedika is the night of the 14th, as we know. If for whatever reason you didn't do it then you could do it in the morning. If you didn't do it then you do it by the time you have to get rid of the chametz. And if you still didn't do it then you can even technically do bedika even on Yontif itself or even after Yontif. The reason being because there's an Isra Derabbanan, as we'll talk about later in the Masechta, of what's called chametz she'avar alav ha-pesach. One is not permitted to derive benefit midrabbanan from chametz that belong to a Jew over the course of Pesach. So there still is some kind of a purpose in doing bedikas chametz even after Pesach, according to the Chachamim. And the Mishnah ends off by pointing out, which we spoke a lot about yesterday, which is that, let's say after I've done the bedika, I still want to keep some chametz to eat, right, for the rest of that night and the following morning, so you have to make sure to hide it away to keep it somewhere safe, so this way you don't have all the issues we spoke about yesterday with weasels and mice and other types of animals dragging the chametz away. Exactly. Well, yeah, correct.
My question is this.
Mm-hmm.
If you got to do bedika,
yeah,
and then you did beer the next day because you burned the chametz. Okay, whatever you did your beer,
right?
Which is really the d'oraisa issur. Okay.
Right.
So why do you have to go back and cover derabbanan from bedikah?
So that's a very good question. Actually, there's a big discussion in the Rishonim about, let's say for example I find chametz on Pesach itself, right? But I've already done bittul. So once you've done bittul, as we've spoken about already a few times, right, bedika only becomes derabbanan. So the question is, if bedika at that stage is only derabbanan, so let's say for example, am I allowed to burn that chametz on yontif itself? We mentioned this briefly last week, based on the principle, yeah, based, yeah, on the principle of mitoch, right? Which is that according to Beis Hillel, so once we allow malacha on yontif for the purpose of ochel nefesh, we also allow it for other purposes as well. So for example, just as you're allowed to use a fire to cook on yontif, so according to Beis Hillel, you would also be allowed to use a fire, you know, in theory, to do other things as well, even if it's not ochel nefesh. So again, that issue, that question about if something is only a tzorech midrabanan, is that considered enough of a reason to be machal, not machal, but to use that fire on yatif? Yeah, that's part of a larger discussion in the Rishonim. Yeah, it's not so connected to our Gemara, but it's a very good question. That's another issue that we also spoke about yesterday. We mentioned that also, that technically chametz doesn't really belong to you, but it's really a chiddush of the Torah that you violate bal yirah bal yimatzeh anyway, even though it doesn't technically belong to you, because otherwise there would never be an isser of bal yirah bal yimatzeh, because you could just say I don't own the chametz. Once Pesach starts, chametz doesn't belong to me. So why do I violate? Right. So in other words, the fact that the Torah gives you an isser of bal yirah bal yimatzeh means that built into the system is that that we view it as if you actually own the chametz. Okay. So the Gemara now wants to know, my time of the Rabbi Yehuda. Why? Again, this is based on the simple understanding of Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah, where he seems to say that you have to do bedikas chametz three times. And the question is, why would he say such a thing? So the Gemara explains, Rav Chista v'Rabba baravuna damri travayu keneged shalosh hashbasos shebatora lo yira'el lecha chametz v'lo yira'el lecha se'or shiv'as yamim se'or lo yimatzei bevateichem ach bayom harishon tashbisu se'or mibateichem. Basically, there are three different times that the Torah says in Parshas Bo they have to get rid of your chametz. So because the Torah mentions it three times, that would lead Rabbi Yehuda to believe that there are three separate obligations of bedikas chametz. So the Gemara questions this. The Gemara says, "Masiv Rav Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Kol Shelo Badak B'Shlosha Prakim Halalu Shuv Eino Bodek Alma B'Mikan Ve'Elachu DePligei." Rav Yosef Bar Yehuda Omer, Kol Shelo Badak B'Shlosha Prakim Halalu Shuv Eino Bodek Alma B'Mikan Ve'Elachu DePligei. So the Gemara again presents. I'm sorry. So the Gemara presents a machlokas here regarding the nature of the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. So according to Rav Yosef's version version of Rabbi Yehuda. He says, if a person did not do bedika at any of those three junctures, namely the night of the 14th, the morning of the 14th, and then the last moment before chametz becomes usher, before you have to get rid of it, so he says you can no longer do bedika. So that means Rabbi Yehuda is not saying that you have to do bedika three times. He's saying that the latest time that you can do bedika is whenever the time to get rid of your chametz is. And then the Gemara presents a slightly different version. Marzutra masne hachi masiv Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda Omer kol shelo badak be'echad mishlosha prakim alalu shuveno bodek alma b'shuveno bodek udipligi. So in this version, Marzutra is just presenting it even more explicitly. Here he seems to assume that Rabbi Yehuda holds you only have to do bedika once. So the question is, how can our Mishnah imply that Rabbi Yehuda says you have to do bedika three times when it's clear from the formulation of these Amoraim that Rabbi Yehuda really only says you have to do bedika once? He's just discussing when the latest time to do bedika is. So the Gemara concedes the point. The Gemara says, you're right. Elo Rabbi Yehuda nami imlo badaka amar v'hacha v'hacha miflagei mar savar mikame yisura in basar yisura lo gzera dilma ase lemechamine v'rabanan savri lo gazrina. The Gemara says, you're right. Even Rabbi Yehuda himself agrees that there is no obligation to do bedika three times. He agrees that you only have to do bedika once. So the question is,
well, because the rabbis
being can everyone mute themselves if they're not already muted? Thank you. Okay, so again, the Gemara tells us that the machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim is a very technical one. The question is one permitted to still do bedikas chametz once the zman isser has begun, once the time of the isser of chametz has begun? What's the issue exactly? So if you think that you can no longer do bedika after the zman isser, like Rabbi Yehuda, so the reason for that presumably is because we're afraid that if you're doing bedika, you may come to actually eat the chametz, and now that it's already a zman of isser, that's a problem. Whereas the Chachamim obviously don't subscribe to that gezerah. The fact that they're allowing you to do bedika on yontif itself obviously means that they're not concerned that you may come to eat the chametz. So again, we'll see in the Gemara as we go on what the nature of this gzeira is, as we'll see. So the Gemara now questions this. Umi gazer Rabbi Yehuda dilma asi lemechamine. Is it really true that Rabbi Yehuda imposes a gzeira and tells you don't do bedika after the shas habir or after the time to get rid of the chametz because we're afraid you may come to eat the chametz? Is that really true? V'hatanan mishakarav haomer yotzin umotzin shuke Yerushalayim shehem alem Kemach v'kali shelo beretzon chachamim divi Rabbi Meir Rabbi Yehuda omer beretzon chachamim hayu osin v'lo kagazer Rabbi Yehuda dilma asi lemecha minei. So the Gemara now is trying to compare the issue of bedikas chametz to a question regarding chadash. Right, chadash means that one is not permitted to eat from the new grains until the karban omer is offered on the second day of Pesach on Tes Zayin Nisan. Now the problem is, as the Mishnah Menachos tells us, that once the karban omer was offered, so in other words, at that point it's completely permissible to eat any sort of new grain. The problem was is that immediately after the carbon omer was offered, people would go out to the marketplaces of Yerushalayim and they were filled with wheat kernels and toasted grains and all these other kinds of things that were clearly harvested before the carbon omer was offered, obviously, because they're being sold, you know, 2 seconds after the carbon was offered. So the Gemara has a machlokas in Menachos whether that was proper. Was it okay? Was it appropriate for the people who were selling the grains and the wheat, whatever it was, to harvest them before the carbon omer was offered? So according to Reb Meir, that was not appropriate. It was not proper for them to harvest the grain before, presumably because Chazal were afraid that they were going to come to eat it before the carbon omer was offered. But Rabbi Yehuda was not concerned for that. The question is, why not? If Rabbi Yehuda is so concerned to not let us do bedikas chametz after the shas habir because you may come to eat chametz, so then what's the difference in the case of chadash? Why is he not concerned that if I'm harvesting the new grain before the carbon omer is offered, maybe I'm going to come to eat the new grain as well? So the Gemara says, no, there's a big difference between the two. Amar Rava, Shiny chadash mitoch shelo hitartelo ella al yedei kitofu zachor, says Rava, that chadash is different because you have to harvest it in a unique way. You cannot harvest chadash using a sickle, using a normal harvesting tool. You have to harvest it by hand. That's the pasuk says mehalchel chermesh ba kama. You have to harvest it using by hand. So because it's such an abnormal way of harvesting, you're going to remind yourself that, oh, because, you know, in other words, the reason I'm doing this is because the carbon omer has not yet been offered, and you therefore you will not come to eat from the new grain. So the Gemara says, okay, Amar le Abaye, Tenach b'shas k'tifa, t'china v'harkada ma'ika le'meimar. So that's all good and well when it comes to harvesting. So because the harvesting is done abnormally, you're going to remind yourself to not eat from the new grain. But the problem is, what about when it comes to things like grinding up the grain or sifting it? So those, in other words, when it comes to those processes, there is no restriction in terms of the way in which you have to do it. You can grind and sift the grain and the flour normally. So if that's the case, isn't that in other words, doesn't that same concern apply that you may come to eat from the new grain? So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. Halo kasha tchina berecha diad harkad al gabe nafa. The Gemara says, no, that even when it comes to the process of grinding and of sifting, those are also done abnormally. How are they done abnormally? Because the grinding must be done using a hand mill as opposed to a mill powered by animals or by water, and the sifter, instead of putting the flour into the sifter, you have to put it on top of the sifter, which is, again, not a normal way of sifting. So because you're doing these things in an abnormal fashion, again, it's going to remind you to not eat from the chadash. So now the Gemara questions this again.
Rabbi,
yeah.
That might answer, Rabbi,
yeah, yeah.
That might answer the question of eating your own grain, but it doesn't answer the question of buying it in the marketplace.
No, because again, we're trying to figure out why it is. In other words, what was the justification in the first place that these guys who were selling all the grain and the wheat, how were they even allowed to harvest it in the first place before the carbon was offered, right? That was the machlokes between Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda. So we're now trying to justify the shita of Reb Yehuda, because Reb Yehuda said that it's perfectly okay for them to harvest it beforehand, right? In other words, and again, the question therefore was, so then how come when it comes to chametz, we said that Reb Yehuda is all concerned that you're going to come to eat it when you're doing bedika. So the Gemara is basically just answering at this stage, at least, that because the process of harvesting the new grain is so abnormal, there are so many things that are different about it, you're going to, in other words, that will remind you to not eat from the new grain. It's not an issue of, in other words, once I buy the grain, it's not a problem because the carbon has already been offered. That's not the issue. When the carbon's offered, everyone's allowed to eat the grain. The issue is that the guys who are harvesting it are doing so before the carbon is offered and we're concerned lest they come to eat it. So because all the processes associated with harvesting the grain are so unique, therefore that concern doesn't apply. That's why Rabbi Yehuda distinguishes between chadash and chametz. That's at least what the Gemara is saying at this stage. Okay. Then the Gemara continues. Elo hadisnan kotzrin beis hashlachim mishet ba'amakim avalo gochin ve'okimna k'Rabbi Yehuda mayika l'meimar. We have another Mishnah Maseches Menachos that says that there are certain types of fields from which you are permitted to harvest the grain normally even before the carbon omer is offered. Namely, when it comes to fields that are irrigated or fields that are in valleys, where those cases the crop grows much faster or much sooner than when the carbon is actually offered. The Mishnah Menachos says one is permitted to harvest normally. The Mishnah never says you have to do it in an abnormal way using your hand. So the question is, how does that make any sense according to Rabbi Yehuda? Again, because if the only reason why he allows you to harvest the chadash before the carbon is offered is because you're doing it abnormally, well, this Mishnah Menachos sounds like you're allowed to do it even normally. That would seem to be a problem. So the Gemara says you're right. Elo Amar Abaye chadash badal. Comes Abaye and says that the distinction between chadash and chametz is much more fundamental. It's not this technicality that, oh, I'm harvesting it abnormally, therefore it's permissible. It's that when it comes to chadash is something from which people abstain from eating all the time until the carbon omer is offered, whereas chametz, as we mentioned before, is something which is prevalent around our houses for 99% of the year. So because chametz is something which is always there, there's a much higher probability that you may come to eat chametz than that you may come to eat chadash. So Abaye says that's the nature of the distinction between chadash and chametz. Okay, so now the Gemara points out, Amar Rava, de Rabbi Huda kashya, de Rabbanan lo kashya, de Rabbi Huda lo kashya, kideshaninan, de Rabbanan nami lo kashya, hu atzmo mechazrel of the sorfo, mechal ka'achel minei. The Gemara just points out here that not only can we resolve Rabbi Huda shita, as we just pointed out, Rabbi Huda himself, the reason why he distinguishes between chametz and chadash is for a very basic reason, because chadash is something from which people abstain all year, whereas chametz is something which is prevalent all year. So the chachamim, in other words, Rabbi Meir, is going to say is also going to draw a distinction, but in the opposite fashion, because according to Rabbi Meir, he says that no, he says in fact chametz is actually less of an issue. What? He says, why is chametz less of an issue? Because he says, if the guy is involved in trying to find and burn chametz, what are the odds that he's going to go and eat it? The guy realizes, he understands, he's involved in the mitzvah of bedika and ultimately bir chametz. So Rameir says, it's highly unlikely that a person who's involved in trying to find and destroy his chametz is going to now turn around and start eating it, right? So he says, therefore, that's another reason to distinguish between chadash and chametz, but in this case, we're actually going to be more machmir regarding chadash as opposed to chametz. Okay, now the Gemara presents another answer. Rav Ashi Amar, to Rabbi Huda ad Rabbi Huda lokashia kemach v'kolitanan. Rav Ashi gives a completely different answer. Rav Ashi says that the way in which we can resolve Rabbi Huda's apparent contradiction between chametz and chadash is to say that the case of the Mishnah was talking about things like wheat kernels and toasted grain. Those types of things, those types of foods, are not edible the way they are. They require further processing before they can become edible. So, in other words, the odds that a person would go ahead and start eating toasted grains and raw wheat kernels of chadash is highly unlikely because they're not really edible the way they are. So Rav Ashi says it's a unique halacha for these types of foods, which are not really edible the way they are, that we're not going to be so concerned regarding chadash. But if it's a regular type of a food, which is fully processed, which is edible, then of course we're going to be concerned. So the Gemara now points out, Hadar Rav Ashi Badusahi. This statement of Rav Ashi is incorrect. It's a fabrication. It's made up. It's wrong. Why is it wrong? So the Gemara says, Hatenach mikali ve'elach meikarad kali ma'ikal ameimar. The Gemara says, because Rav Ashi's statement would only explain why it's permissible to harvest this grain, in other words, during that time when you're toasting the grain or when it's a wheat kernel. But what about beforehand? What about when everything is still raw? So when things are still as raw wheat kernels, they're technically edible also, and yet there is no restriction on harvesting the wheat kernels when they're completely raw. That would seem to go against Rav Ashi, because Rav Ashi says that if there's a chance that you may come to eat it, then the gzera should apply. So then the Gemara says, V'chi tema al yidei kitov kidurava ela kotrin beis hashlachin v'sheba amakim be'okimno k'rabbi Yehuda ma'ikol ameimar. So the Gemara says, okay, but maybe you'll suggest, as we saw earlier in the Gemara, that the reason why it's permissible is because you're harvesting the grain in an abnormal fashion, like Rava told us earlier. The problem is that we had another Mishnah Menachos, which we also cited earlier, that told us that you are permitted to harvest normally in fields that are irrigated, in fields in the valley where things grow much sooner. So the question is, how does that make any sense? How are you allowed to harvest things in a normal fashion? So the Gemara says, you're right, Ela de Rav Ashi Badusa, he must be that this statement of Rav Ashi, where he distinguishes between foods that are fully processed and foods that are not, is incorrect. That distinction at the end of the Gemara does not stand. Okay, then the Gemara question is, further, the Gemara says, "V'chol heicha de lo badal minei migazer Rabbi Yehuda." Is it really true that when it comes to a type of an item or a food that people do not abstain from, is it really true that Rabbi Yehuda is going to impose a gezerah to tell you to to abstain from those activities? For Hasnan, we have a famous Mishnah in Masechet Shabbos in Bava Madlikin. The Mishnah says, "Lo yikov adam shofera shal beitza v'malena shemen v'itnena b'tzaran er b'shvil shetehem en atefes va'afilu hishal cheres." The Rabbi Yehuda matir. So according to the Chachamim, they say a person is not permitted to pierce a hole in an eggshell and then plate and then have oil basically dripping from the eggshell into a candle because even if it's from an earthenware jug with a tube into a candle, because the concern is that you may come to remove it and ultimately extinguish the flame and be in violation of the malach of mechab of extinguishing. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda says that this is completely permissible. Rabbi Yehuda permits one to take an eggshell or to take an earthenware utensil and attach a tube to it and have oil drip into the candle. He's obviously not concerned for the issue of mechab. But the question is, why not? In other words, if we just said that according to Rabbi Yehuda, whenever you have something from which people do not abstain, Rabbi Yehuda imposes a gezerah, so the question is, why is he allowing me to do this in this case in the Mishnah and Shabbos? So the Gemara says, no, there's a big difference here. Hasam yishum chumr de Shabbos mivdal bedilei. He says, because since Shabbos is so machmir, in other words, you're dealing potentially with the nisr de oraisa, with the chi of skila, with the chi of chatas, so people know to stay away from chilul Shabbos. So you don't need to impose extra gezeros to tell you to not come to be mechal Shabbos. So the Gemara says, is that true? V'rami de Shabbos ad de Shabbos. Desanya chevel delisha nif lo yehi kosho ela unvo. Rabbi Yehuda omer korechal of punda opsakya uvil vashe lo ya'anvenu. Kashya de Rabbi Yehuda de Rabbi Yehuda, kashya de Rabbanan de Rabbanan. The Gemara says, now we have a double contradiction within Hilchos Shabbos between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda. What's the issue here? The Gemara quotes another halacha when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos. Let's say I have a bucket that I want to lower into a well to draw water on Shabbos, and I have a rope on the bucket, but the rope snapped. So the question is, can I reattach that rope on Shabbos? So that's a machloka. So according to the Chachamim, the only thing you're allowed to do, you can't reattach it normally, that would be an Isser D'Oraisa of kosher, of tying a knot, but rather what you can do is simply tie it into a bow, whereas Rabbi Yehuda says you can't even do that. You have to take some kind of a sash or a money wallet or whatever it is and tie it on, but you can't even tie it into a bow. The question is, this seems to be a double contradiction to the Mishnah we just cited a second ago from Bama Malikin, because the Chachamim in that Mishnah told me that you're not allowed to pierce a hole in an eggshell or in the earthenware kli and attach a tube to the candle because we're afraid it's going to lead to mechabeh, but Rabbi Yehuda was not concerned for that, then all of a sudden when it comes to the case of reattaching the rope to the bucket, everything is reversed. So the question is, why are these shittos being reversed over here? So the Gemara says, not true. The Gemara says, de Rabbanan lokashia, shemen b'shemen michlaf, aniva b'kshira lo michlaf, de Rabbi Yehuda lokashia, taimu de Rabbi Yehuda, lam yishum de gazer aniva atu kshira, elam yishum de kasavar aniva gufa kshira hi. The Gemara says that really there is a significant distinction between these two cases. According to the Rabbanan, they say that it's likely that a person may come to confuse oil with oil. oil. So if we allow you to pierce a hole in the eggshell or in the earthenware kli, you may come to then use the oil for some other purpose, which will lead to mechaba. But apparently the Rabbana were not concerned that a person is going to confuse tying a regular knot with tying a bow. They were considered to be significantly different. Whereas according to Rabbi Huda, he says the issue here is not that we're afraid that if we let you tie a bow, you may come to tie a knot. Rabbi Huda happens to hold in Masechet Shabbos that tying a bow is considered a form of kosher in and of itself. We in other words, we do not assume that way. We assume like the Chachamim that tying a bow may only be a problem midrabanan because it may lead to kosher of a real knot. But according to Rabbi Huda, tying a bow itself is an Isser d'oraisa. So that's why Rabbi Huda is going to forbid you from tying even a bow back onto the bucket. Okay, then the Gemara points out, V'rami d'rabanan ad'rabanan, disnan kosher d'lib sakya v'lo b'chevel, Rabbi Yehuda Mater. We have a further contradiction between the shittos of the Rabbanan, because the Mishnah tells us that a person is permitted to, as we just said before, to tie a sash or a money wallet or whatever it is around the bucket in order to draw water, but you're not allowed to tie a regular rope. But Rabbi Yehuda says that tying a regular rope is okay. So the Gemara says, what's the case here? Chevel demai. Ilem a chevel da'alma v'Rabbi Yehuda Mater kesher shel kayamahu devade asi levatule. So the Gemara says, if we're talking about a regular rope, how then can Rabbi Yehuda permit you to tie a regular rope on to a bucket? That is certainly going to be an isser of kosher. Why is that an isser of kosher? Because when you're tying a rope onto a bucket, you're, in other words, the assumption is that you're going to leave the rope there forever. You're not planning to take it off. In other words, you're going to leave it on the bucket forever. That's called a kesher shel kayama. That's a permanent knot, and that would be a violation of kosher. So how can Rabbi Yehuda allow this? So the Gemara says, you're right. Elop shita de gardi, the gazur. So in other words, I'm sorry. So in other words, the Gemara says the case is where it's a unique type of a rope that you're tying. It's the rope of a weaver. So a weaver's rope is considered like a specialized item, and he's not going to leave it on the bucket forever because he needs it for his weaving. So because of that, in other words, the Gemara says that does not qualify as a kesher shel kayama. So the Gemara asks, the gazur rabbanan chevel degar diatu chevel da'alma. So are the chachamim going to impose a gzera and say, don't tie a weaver's rope onto the bucket because we're afraid that you may come to tie a real rope? So the Gemara says, that is a legitimate gzera because chevel bechevel mechlaf. Whereas aniva mikshira lo machalfa, the Gemara says it is very likely that one may confuse a regular rope with a weaver's rope, but it is much less likely, according to the Chachamim, that you're going to confuse a regular knot with that of a bow. Okay, then the Gemara says v'chol hicha debadol minei lo gazer Rabbi Yehuda. Again, the Gemara asks the same question it asked earlier: is it really true that in a case where people do not typically abstain from an activity, that Rabbi Yehuda will not impose a gzera? V'hasanya b'chor she'achaz odam afilu humes ein mekizin lo dam divrei Rabbi Yehuda v'chachamim. So this is a brisa in Maseches Bechoros about the following case. We know that there's an isur de oraisa to inflict a mum on a bechor, because a bechor is an animal that has kedusha. You're not allowed to inflict a mum on the animal. The question is, what if I have an animal? I have an animal that's a bechor, and the animal is having some kind of a convulsion, some kind of a seizure, whatever it is that requires bloodletting. If you don't do bloodletting to the animal will die. The question is, am I now permitted to bloodlet the bechor in order to save the animal's life? So that's a machlokes in the Gemara. So Rabbi says that even though the animal is going to die, you are not allowed to do bloodletting, because if you do so, there is a chance that you may come to inflict a mum, and that will be a violation of an isser d'oraisa of inflicting a mum. Whereas the Chacham say no, the Chacham say you could do bloodletting, just be careful not to make a mum. If you do bloodletting carefully, then you don't necessarily have to make a mum on the animal. This halacha about bloodletting, according to Rabbi Huda, implies that Rabbi Huda holds that he does impose a gezerah, even though a bechor is not a type of an animal that people are typically handling, because it has kedusha. It's supposed to go to the Kohen, it's supposed to be offered as a carbon, and yet Rabbi Huda is still imposing a gezerah. So why is that? So the Gemara says no. Hasa mitoch she'adam bahol al mamono amrinan isharis le b'makom she'in osin b'mum ase le'mevad b'makom she'osin b'mum. So the Gemara says no, that the reason why Rabbi Huda imposes a gezerah here is almost for a technical reason, is because if you see that your animal is going to die and you're going to lose out on this animal, a person is going to get all, they're going to get discombobulated and they're going to do whatever they can to try and save their animal, to try and save their possessions. So therefore, it's possible that a person, in other words, if we say, okay, you can do bloodletting to save the animal, but because in your haste to try and save the animal, you may go overboard and do an actual mum. So therefore, therefore, Rabbi Huda said, just back away and don't do anything to the animal at all. So the question is, how would the Rabbanan respond to that? Rabbanan, kol shekein, de'ilo sharis le'klau, asilamevad. So the Chachamim would say, kal v'chomer, they say, if we don't let you do anything to to save the animal's life, then for sure you're going to go overboard, and for sure you're going to go and try and go crazy and make a mum. So let's at least let you just do bloodletting to save the animal's life. This way you won't go overboard and try to actually inflict a mum on the animal. Okay, then the Gemara questions this again. Do we really say that according to Rabbi Yehuda, a person is going to get all discombobulated, and out of sorts regarding their possessions? V'hasnan, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Ein Mekadrin Habehema Biyantif Mimneshu Osech Habura Ava Mekartzefin, V'chachomim Omerim Ein Mekadrin Af Ein Mekartzefin, V'sanya Izehu Kidur Ve'ezehu Kirtzuf, Kidur Ktanim Ve'osin Chabura, Kirtzuf Gedolim Ve'ein Osin Chabura. The Mishnah Maseches Beitza presents a machlokas regarding in which scenarios, if at all, is a person allowed to take a comb to comb an animal on Yantif. So in other words, the Mishnah makes a distinction between what's called Mekadrin and Mekartzefin. The basic difference is regarding, regarding how thick or thin or fine or otherwise the combs of the teeth of the comb are. So in other words, according to Rabbi Yehuda, he says that a person is not permitted to take a very fine tooth comb to comb the animal with, because there it's much more likely that you're going to cause a wound, you're going to cause the animal to bleed. But if you're using a much larger comb where the teeth are much wider, then Rabbi Yehuda says that's permissible. Whereas the Chachamim say that you can't do anything. You can't even use a large, even a large comb on Yantif. So the question is, why is Rabbi Yehuda allowing this if, in fact, he's concerned that because, in other words, you're going to be so concerned about your animal, about combing, combing the animal, so why is he even allowing you to use the wide tooth comb? Why isn't he concerned that you may come to use the, to use a small tooth comb? So the Gemara says, no. Hasam di ishavik le mayis amrinan adam ba'al amamono, hacha ishavik le tzara ba'almahu, lo amrinan adam ba'al amamono. So the Gemara makes the following distinction, that in the first case of the bloodletting, if you don't tend to your animal, the animal will die. So in that case, people are much more concerned regarding the status of their animal, that they may come to do something crazy like inflict a mum on the bechor. Whereas here, the only issue of combing or not combing the animal is that the animal will be in slightly more pain. So a person is not going to necessarily go overboard and violate isurei d'oraisa just to spare the animal from pain. That's according to the Chachamim. Whereas, and then the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda, Maishna gabi chametz de gazar, u'maishna gabi kirtzuf de lo gazar. Why is it that Rabbi Yehuda felt it important to only impose a gzera specifically when it comes to chametz, but not in the case of the combs? In other words, why is he allowing you to use the fine tooth, and I'm sorry, to use the wide tooth comb and not be concerned lest you come to use the fine tooth comb, but whereas when it comes to chametz, he does not allow you to do bedika after the shas habir because you may come to eat the chametz? So the Gemara says, because lechem michlaf, kidur bekirtzuf lo michlaf, because it's more likely that a person is going to confuse chametz with matzah as opposed to confusing a wide tooth comb with a large tooth comb, because they're just completely different utensils. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda was not concerned regarding that issue. Okay.